Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins me. We're going to talk about QGIS, the geographical information software that helps you lay out maps and also analyze those maps. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 270, recorded October 23rd, 2013. QGIS. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing to you as often as I can, usually each week, but sometimes not quite every week, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects in open source that you may be using every day, the projects you might not have ever heard of and would like to find more about. So usually joining me, almost always joining me is a co-host this week, and none exception to that would be Gareth Greenaway. Gareth, welcome back to the show.
Morning, Randall. How are you?
I'm almost awake. It's a little tough still. I'm waiting for the caffeine to fully kick in, so we'll see how this goes. We'll just see how it's running. You're speaking to us from Thousand Oaks, the usual spot.
Again, yep, Thousand Oaks. Kind of a dreary, gray day this morning.
It is a horrible
California-like.
I can't imagine. This is not what I always picture Los Angeles to be like, but I'm staring out the window of the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes building here, staring at the approaching airplanes coming down to LAX, and unfortunately, it is gray. It is very gray. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I'm going back there actually tomorrow night to head back home for a while, and I was used to this gray stuff, but now that I've come here and it's been so many sunny days in a row, the gray just really gets to me. It's like, ooh.
But we actually have a quota of the number of days we have to have like a gray, dreary day, or else the rest of the country gets jealous.
And you wouldn't want that to happen at all.
Exactly.
Gray. Well, the show's not about travel logs. It's not about Los Angeles in particular. It's about open source. We have always wonderful guests to come on and talk about their projects. No exception again today. We have Tim Sutton, who's going to be representing, I don't know how to pronounce this, QGIS, 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 one of those. We'll have to ask him how to pronounce that. It looks like it is graphic information software. So being able to manage, geographic information software, being able to represent maps and things, put data associated with the maps and drawing them. And apparently they just had a 2.0 release. So we'll have to talk about what's new with all this thing. What do you know about QGIS?
I know next to nothing about QGIS. I'm really excited to learn about it, though. I had looked at there's a project called OpenStreetMap a few years ago that I had looked at that's related to mapping, like open source mapping software. But beyond that, I don't have too much experience, but looking forward to hearing about it.
Well, there we go. So rather than us chatting idly about what we don't know about QGIS, let's go ahead and bring on the expert about QGIS for our show today, Tim Sutton. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
Very cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in a hotel room in Jakarta at the moment, but I actually live in South Africa, right near the southern tip of Africa, if you're geographically interested in those kind of things. So 100 km from the tip.
Very cool. Very cool. I sort of botched my way through describing what – well, first off, how do you pronounce it? Is it QGIS? QGIS? What is it?
It's actually a bit of a contentious issue. There is no precise definition of how you should pronounce it. If you live in Germany, I think you say QGIS. And if you live in some other places, you say QGIS. And I like to say QGIS. So and I think the Americans say QGIS or something like that. Spell it out. So.
Okay. Well,
you say
whatever
how
way
you like.
whatever way it's pronounced, why don't you go ahead and tell us sort of what the 30,000-foot view, which is also appropriate given that it's about graphical information or geographic information. What problem is QGIS solving?
So, in a nutshell, it's an application that you can use to create, edit, visualize, work with geographic information. So that's like in its simplest form, that would be points, lines, and polygons that you could represent on a map, and also sort of aerial photography or some other kind of what's called raster data. So it's within the environment of QGIS, you can sort of load up those different layers of points, lines, and polygons, or say, for example, an aerial photograph, or it could be a terrain model or something like that, and then overlay them on top of each other, and then change the symbology of those layers so that you can make your dots big and pink or green or with a different symbol. And then you can also create data within the environment. So you've got digitizing tools. So if you ever used the GIMP or Inkscape or something like that, you can think of it like the same kind of environment as what the Inkscape might give you. All the data that you create is geographically referenced. And then you can also attach information to the spatial data. So that means that, for example, you've got a point, you can attach information saying that this is Cape Town or New York or whatever the name of the point might be. And whatever you can, basically, you've got a little database attached to each vector layer or point, line, and polygon layer. So you can store pretty much arbitrary data with each point. And then when you've got all that in the system, you can analyze it. You can do things like saying how many shops are within 5 kilometers of a certain location, or show me all the roads which are of national road or motorway or something like that. You can start to ask spatial questions of your data. And once you've done your analysis, then you can also we've got a print composition environment where you can go use something like, I guess, similar to what you'd get in Scribus or a desktop publishing kind of application, where you can lay out a page with a map on it and a legend and a scale bar and all the sort of traditional things that you'd put on a map. And then you can make a PDF of it and send it to your boss and impress him. So that's the sort of 2-minute elevator pitch of it.
That's really great, actually. There's a lot of things you can do. So let me start piecing some of these out. So within it must have then some sort of database of, like say, for the United States, it would have like the geographic outline of all 50 states. Where does that data come from?
Okay, so we're basically the application that you use to open data sets. So you can think of it like you can use OpenOffice to open an OpenOffice document or a spreadsheet or whatever. So we're basically providing that sort of Office application platform, and then you've got to go and get hold of the data. And if you're in America, you're quite lucky. There are a lot of free data sources. So all your street data, I think all the elevation data, aerial photographs, pretty much anything you want, you can get from, I think, the USGS website. If you're in the rest of the world, then the OpenStreetMap project that Gareth mentioned earlier is a good place to go. You can sort of download it in a format digestible by QGIS, and then give it your own color codes and what have you, sort of symbolize it to your own liking. And then most countries, the governments have some kind of GIS data set, which hopefully they publish and make free to everybody. That's what we obviously try to encourage, being open source guys and open data guys. Many countries silo their data and they don't make it available. So OpenStreetMap is kind of like a grassroots way of getting that data in. And then you can also collect it yourself. You could take a GPS or something like that and just go and walk around your neighborhood and capture data and then bring it into QGIS. We've also got sort of plugins, so you could put like a Google Maps backdrop and start digitizing on the top of a map from Google Maps and capturing your own data. So there's hundreds of ways to get the data in. And the other part of what you said is we must have a database. We actually have sort of drivers that you can fetch data from different data sources. So in the GIS world, the sort of ubiquitous format is something called a shapefile, which is a stupid name because it's actually a bunch of files. It's basically a kind of like a file-based database. You get a DBF file, which is, you know, like the old DBase 4 or 3, whichever version you might have used in the past. And that's like the data table for the data. And then you get a shape file, like a SHP file, which has got the geometries in it. And you get a little file that sort of connects the database file and that together. And that's the sort of most commonly used data format, but there are also many other formats. So a GPX file from your GPS we can read. And if you did a show on Postgres a while back, there's actually there's an extension to Postgres called PostGIS or PostGIS, which gives you spatial data storage capabilities in Postgres. And that's actually what we sort of normally recommend people use if you're doing anything more than a sort of a basic project. So you can actually load up all your data into Postgres, and then QGIS can read it directly out of there and display it straight onto the map.
I want to caution our audience. I know you said, you know, load up Google Maps, then draw on top of that, but that's actually a violation of their copyright. So you need to be careful not to do that. Okay, just to get people in trouble here for listening to the show. So there we go. But yes, I remember I was doing some work with OpenStreetMap, and they were very careful to say not to do that, because that would be driving data from Google, and that would be actually hurting OpenStreetMap to do that.
Yeah. I don't encourage or condone it, but you can do it.
Right, yes. We make it possible. We just don't say it's necessarily legal. That's good. Well, I guess in some parts of the world it might be okay, but no, I don't want to do that. Okay, so I'm getting my data from some GIS source. I think in the U.S. also the street information comes from, I think they're called the Tiger database. Yeah. So I've got my information coming in there, and then I have some data that must be related to that. And then, so one of the next steps might be to, you know, highlight that data associated with different, say, geographic regions. And then, so the output of that is a PDF, or output of that is like stuff I screen capture? Where does it go from there?
So what you do in QGIS is you create a project, which is just a collection of different layers, of thematic layers that you would load in. So you might load the streets layer, and then you might load a buildings layer, you might load some points of interest where the nearest Burger King is or what have you. And then you sort of combine them all together, and you create a map, like a map project in QGIS. And you can save that project file and then sort of open it again later. And then you can take that and then produce a printout. You basically compose it in our map composer, and you can have more than one printout. So you could have an A0 printout and A4 one, different sizes or different map elements on them, different labels and so on. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of pass that on to somebody if you want to. Although I must say, like the intent of GIS is not really just printing maps. It's really about the analysis. So it's a platform that you can do spatial analysis. So you get all those layers into your project. You start to ask questions, like spatial questions about your data. Like if there was a flood in this river, how many buildings might be affected, for example? Mm-hmm. And then you could sort of model it and select all the buildings, for example, based on a 100-meter buffer around the river, and then see actually, okay, those buildings might be affected. Then you might take those and do some like cost analysis. So like give me the sum of all the selected buildings, and you know, what does that equal in monetary value and so on. So the intent is really to provide a spatial analysis platform, and you know, printing a map is just a vehicle for presenting the results of your analysis. And I guess that's where we sort of diverge from Google Maps or Google Earth or one of these mainstream map viewing platforms. Is really those are just about visualization, and we're about, you know, providing an analysis platform. And we've got a huge number of different tools in QGIS that you can use to analyze your data. And we've also got a plugin architecture, so if what we ship with QGIS isn't enough, you can download from our plugin repository different kind of plugins that you do all different things. So you know, the plugins range incredibly in their scope. So, I mean, for example, one of our community has written a time series plugin, so you can load some data that's got timestamps associated with it. Say, for example, people's location over time, and then you can sort of play it back like a movie almost, and see how people moved through your city during time. She did a nice little demo using Twitter, the geo feed from Twitter, and then you could see where people are tweeting from, over a certain amount of time or what have you. So it's really an analysis platform, and the printing is just the vehicle for producing the result of your analysis in a format that somebody can digest.
Cool. And so What's the history of the project? How did it all get started?
So I should explain a little bit of backstory that we're operating in a space somewhat equivalent to like LibreOffice operates in the same space as Microsoft Office, and I guess they don't really have any competition anymore, but you know, products, you know, sort of productivity software. We're operating in a space where there are a couple of big vendors that produce very expensive desktop GIS applications that kind of do what we do and maybe a bit more. When I say very expensive, I don't know the prices exactly, but we're sort of talking like $20,000 for a, you know, for the standard desktop package or something like that from the main proprietary vendor. So 11 years ago, the founder of QGIS, which is not myself, and the founder is Gary Sherman, who lives in a, I always like to say, in the wastelands of Alaska somewhere. I think he actually lives in Anchorage, but it always seems like a dark and lonely, icy wasteland from the pictures he sends. But he was basically trying to just view some geospatial data on his open source Linux based desktop, and there wasn't any program to do that. You know, typical things. So he wanted to do scratches only. So he just built a simple little viewer application that could connect to PostGIS, because PostGIS and Postgres have been around, you know, for the last 11 years. So you could already store your data in a geospatial database, but there wasn't any real good way to view it. And he built this little application, and he put it onto Freshmeat. I don't know if Freshmeat still is very popular, but it was in those days. It was still popular, and I was, you know, watching always Freshmeat to see what kind of cool things were coming out. And myself and a few others noticed it, and we sort of got on board on the project. And so in the beginning, it was very small, very informal. The first version of the software was very limited. I mean, you could basically load some data from Postgres and Pan and Zoom and sort of do some very basic things and change some colors of lines and things. And then it's the normal story of open source. Other people saw the utility of it and started to add new features and so on. Myself, I mean, I came along to the project. I was already a GIS practitioner and an open source free software sort of convert. And I'd come from a background where, you know, I was actually working in a nature conservation agency in South Africa. My training is actually nature conservation, not GIS or software programming. But we wanted to use GIS to, you know, manage nature reserves, manage biodiversity, and so on. And the software was incredibly expensive. We did actually get a grant from the proprietary vendor, but I really saw that there was no future in like making this kind of spatial analysis tool open to the general public or making it pervasive. And, a lot of other people, I think, saw the same thing, that we're just basically operating in a playing field where there's nothing for, between the person who can spend $20,000 on a piece of software and the average guy on the street, there's nothing. So I think that's incentivized a lot of people to start to work on QGIS. And I think after 7 or 8 years, we released version one. So it was quite a long time coming to make a first version of QGIS. I mean, we had a lot of sort of 0.something releases in the run up to that. But the sort of version one was really the intent was just to have a very capable GIS data browser, and we didn't really focus very much on the analysis side of things at all. And in the time that we were building that version one, we gathered a lot of enthusiastic developers in the project. And then subsequent to that, we started, you know, really trying to improve the offering that we had a lot. And we put in a lot of analytical functionality, but also some really great tools for producing great looking maps and so on. Up to the point where in September now this year, we launched version 2, which is a huge, you know, step forward again over version 1 that we had. And again, we had various 1-point-something releases along the way to that. And it's a grassroots project. There's no big company that decided to start it and just hand over the source code or something like actually LibreOffice, you know, came from, Star Office or something before that. And we just basically started from the most basic functionality and just built onto it.
Just to clarify, was that electrical functionality or electoral functionality?
Sorry, I didn't. In which context? No.
But you were just talking about some of the features that you added. We were just curious if it was electrical functionality or electoral functionality.
I think I said analytical. Sorry.
Oh, analytical.
It's my South African accent.
No worries.
Analytical functionality. Yeah.
Okay, it makes more sense. So you kind of mentioned that there are quite a few projects. In the kind of GIS space, What are kind of some of your major competitors, I guess, both commercial and kind of open source?
Yeah, so, well, in the commercial space, the main sort of flagship product is called ArcGIS, which is by a company called ESRI or Esri, which is a multi-billion dollar company, and they've basically been in the GIS game, I guess, for 25, 30 years. I'm not exactly sure how long they've been doing it. And then there are a couple of other sort of fairly big proprietary vendors, but by far the most dominant is ESRI. And then on the open source side, there are actually many, many sort of GIS or geospatial-related open-source projects now. When I started out sort of 11 years ago looking at these things, there were actually only a handful of them. But especially in the last 5 years, there's just really been booming. And I think part of that is because of the sort of sudden availability of geospatially referenced information. Like you can get Twitter feeds, you can get your photos geo-referenced off, you know, your camera. Everything's suddenly got a geospatial content related to it, and people want obviously to be able to visualize that. So we don't really. I guess we have some competition in open source, but we kind of think of it more as co-opetition. So there's another very venerable GIS package called GRASP, which was actually a U.S. military project originally, I believe, and they donated to into the public domain 30 years ago. So it's actually very, you know, one of probably the older open source projects out there. And then there is a PostGIS, which I mentioned, which is, you know, the data store, and there are a couple of other desktop offerings which sort of do kind of similar things to QGIS. Of course, I'm biased, but I think QGIS is the best of them out there. and then there are also now in the more recent years, there are a lot of web applications which are starting to sort of provide to some extent the same functionality as what desktop applications like QGIS are doing. So there's OpenLayers, there's Leaflet, and there are a whole bunch of other sort of open source sort of web mapping environments.
Okay. Currently, what license is QGIS licensed under?
We're under GPL2 and 2 or greater, actually. And there's been some talk about switching to GPL version 3, but I think we're all sort of, well, I'm speaking for myself more, I'm very license idiotic. I'm happy with the GPL2, and I haven't really got any strong desire to change it to something else. But so it's all under GPL2, so you can use it, but you must give back your changes to the community. And we sort of we had a few discussions about using, for example, LGPL, because some people want to build proprietary extensions to QGIS via plugins or what have you. But we sort of kind of feel that we want people to contribute back, so we don't really want to create a platform that discourages or makes it easy for people to not contribute back to QGIS.
Okay. What platforms does QGIS currently run on? Like, if I wanted to get started using it, what are my platform options?
I should actually probably try and answer it by telling you which ones it doesn't on, because run on, because it pretty much runs on Mac, runs on Linux, runs on Windows. There's an Android port for it, so you can run it on Android. You can't run it on iOS or the iPhone. And people have ported it to BSD, and so pretty much will run on anything that you can compile Qt and other libraries that we require on.
Are there plans to have a port available for iOS, or is it kind of the lack of Qt?
So in Qt 5, which we're supporting still Qt 4, Qt 5, I believe you can, you know, there's a port for iOS. So the possibility is there that once we switch to Qt 5, we'd be able to run on iOS. But there's nobody actively working on that at the moment. But I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility for us to do that.
Okay. What's the most interesting thing you've seen someone do with QGIS?
I could give a long list, but let me sort of cherry pick a couple. I often get sort of random emails from people writing to me, asking me things or telling me about things they're doing with QGIS. So, I mean, I got one from some people in Ethiopia doing subsistence farming using QGIS to help them plan their you know, the crop production and so on. There's somebody in South Africa who's doing recording all the game counts for in game reserves with QGIS, and then they can sort of monitor animal populations and the movements of animals. Some of the really interesting things are happening in Switzerland, which actually there's a strong core of developer and community activity in Switzerland, and some of our earliest developers come from Switzerland. And basically what happens is a lot of your town council probably uses ESRI products, and most people's town councils do. A lot of the Swiss councils were using ESRI products, and they sort of realized that, well, for the amount of money that they're spending every year, by the way, I think that's $20,000 that I mentioned. I'm not sure if that's a yearly cost or if it's a once-off cost, but I know that there's some sort of yearly maintenance fee that they charge. They've kind of figured out that for the money that they're spending on ESRI products, they could kind of take half of it and keep it in the bank and spend the other half on paying people to add the features they need to QGIS. And so there are quite a few administrations in Switzerland and all around the world, but particularly in Switzerland, that are running their towns on QGIS. So all the city infrastructure, the gas mains, wastewater, the road plans, the zonal planning, everything that they got in QGIS, and they can do all, query the infrastructure and use it to help to manage the infrastructure. And then really, I mean, just the list just goes on and on. So people do every facet of work, from like traffic management to water management to I got a message from a guy, still an email reply from, he wants to climb every highest peak in South America that's above I forget what the altitude was, and he's like looking to use QGIS to identify the highest peaks. I mean, so you could just pretty much use it for any spatial question that you might have to ask.
Interesting. I'm especially interested in the fact that that government was using QGIS and actually funding development. That's always good to see. So we had a question from the IRC channel. Does QGIS have a data repository for mappings that users can access?
We're not in the sort of making the data available business, but we have repositories of plugins and sort of add-ons for QGIS, but for the data side of things, we support a number of different protocols that allow you to access online data repositories. So, I mean, the whole GIS field is quite vast, but within GIS, there is a open data protocol sort of arena, which covers protocols that allow you to connect to a web service. And there are a number of these different web services. So there's a web coverage service which allows you to fetch sort of rasterized data. There's a web feature service that allows you to fetch points, lines, and polygons. And there's a web mapping service which allows you to fetch pre-rendered maps. And again, most governments, most city councils, many independent organizations publish their GIS data via these protocols. So if you know what the address of the portal is, or you just do a Google search for WMS or WFS, WCS, you'll find long lists of these data portals, and you can basically connect to them straight from QGIS and sort of consume the data within QGIS. And then we've also got, like I said, we've got compatibility with OpenStreetMap data, so you can probably the easiest way to get started getting data is going along to like one of these OpenStreetMap extraction services. The one that I sort of use is called cloudmade.com, and They'll provide you, like, you can just they've broken up the world by country and then by regions within countries, and you can just dig down to the level you want, and they'll provide you the shape files that come from OpenStreetMap, which you can just download and use on your desktop.
Okay. Currently, what shift gears a bit? What libraries was QGIS currently utilize for its use?
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned we use Qt 4 at the moment. I can't remember if we started on Qt 2. I think we started on the majority of our life we were on Qt 3 or 4, and I guess at some point we'll switch to Qt 5. And that Qt, we're using it sort of both the user interface level, but we also quite heavily use the Qt core libraries for things like string representation. By the way, QGIS is written in sort of 90% in C++ and the other 10% in Python. And so we use that for the sort of upper level where you've got your graphical user interface, and then also for doing things like network access and data I/O and so on. But then we use a whole bunch of different open source geospatial libraries. So one of the key ones is called GDAL, or G-D-A-L, GDAL. The author pronounces it GDAL. And GDAL is kind of like, it actually stands for Generic Data Abstraction Library. So it's a kind of like a middleware between all different sorts of data formats, and you can basically use it to read in, for example, a shapefile or a comma-separated values file or a KML file from Google Earth format file, and hundreds of other formats, both in rasterized data and in vectorized data. And so we sort of extend we use GDAL so that we can read in all these different formats, and then we also use like libpq, the Postgres library, so that we can talk directly to Postgres. We just got Oracle support, so I think you need to have the proprietary Oracle drivers on your system or something, and then you can connect to Oracle, and same for MS SQL Server and SQL Anywhere, I think it's called SQL Anywhere, Spatial Light. So basically all of those different data sources that we support, we have either the open source library, or in some cases you need to have the proprietary library on your system. Obviously we don't ship them because that's not compatible with the GPL. And then there are also sort of a bunch of other libraries for sort of dealing with geometry operations. So there's a library called Geos, which allows you to do things like what is the intersection between two polygons, or is this point within this polygon, or does this line touch this point, and so on. So you can do all this kind of spatial operations. So there's quite a lot of different libraries that we use. We've also got... as well as the desktop application that we provide, we've also got a QGIS server application, which is kind of built off the same code base, and then that uses CGI libraries. And so it's actually really, we really try to benefit as much as possible from all these other open source projects out there that have built, sort of single purpose libraries, and incorporate them as much as possible, so we didn't have to rewrite everything from first principles.
Excellent. So one of the things that you had mentioned in kind of the notes that you'd sent over to us was a project called InnoSafe. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that.
Sure. So InnoSafe is a disaster contingency planning tool that like in my day job I work on. So QGIS in the beginning for me was just a volunteer hobby project, and for many others, but many of us are now sort of making our money by doing consulting services around QGIS. And so the reason I'm here in Jakarta in a hotel at the moment is because I'm working on InnoSafe. And basically what the tool does is it allows you to do like planning for disasters. So, for example, there's a flood. We want to know how many buildings might be affected, or how many people might be affected, or if there's an earthquake, again, how many people or buildings might be affected, or for volcanoes and so on. And also to answer questions like, okay, if we evacuate 30,000 people, you know, how much food do we need to have for them? How much water do we need to have for them? Sort of what are the sort of living requirements for those people? And we try to sort of make in InnerSafe, we try to make everything in a sort of easily digestible format so that you know, people, when there's a disaster, you don't have time to sort of monkey around trying to do the actual, you know, the raw analysis for these kind of things. So we try to make a very simple user interface based on QGIS, which allows you to just answer a question sort of in the event of something, how many something would be affected. And so then you sort of load in some layers. You might load in a population layer and a buildings layer and a flood layer or what have you. And then you sort of can ask this question, and it will sort of produce a PDF report for you. It's a really awesome project because it's all sponsored by well, there's actually various sponsors. There's the Australian Aid Agency in Indonesia. They've got a group here called AIFDR, which is Australian Indonesian Facility for Disaster Reduction, and they're and also the World Bank has been, you know, sponsoring this project, and you know, they basically really get open source. Everything is built, you know, is published under open license. The source code is all on GitHub, and they care about code quality, and we've got a lot of unit tests and so on. And it's really, you know, a great platform. Great to have QGIS as the platform that we can go to people like this and say to them, you know, look, you can use our free software. You can take the software and give it to every disaster manager out there in the field. It won't, you know, other than the development costs, it's not going to cost you anything to provide them the software. And so I've been working on the project for the last year and almost 2 years now, and it's been really great, great ride. We actually won the Black Duck. Top 10 Rookie of the Year award this year for the work we did last year, which is Black Duck is the company that makes the Olo website. I don't know if you've used that before, which is where you sort of can go and see various metrics about how your open source project is doing, and they select from I think they've got, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of projects on their database, and they select from that, you know, 10 projects every year to showcase. So it was quite a nice pat on the back for the project.
It's actually a pretty nice award to have gotten for your organization, or for the new project, I mean. Mm-hmm. What you mentioned earlier that you're a consumer of OpenStreetMap data. Mm-hmm. Do you also find that QGIS is being used to help enhance the OpenStreetMap data?
Yeah, so OpenStreetMap actually have their own sort of set of tools. They've got Potlatch, and they've got a new one whose name I forget, which are sort of web-based tools for creating the data. And they've also got another one called JOSM. And they're quite specialized because the data format of OpenStreetMap is kind of a little bit strange in the GIS world, in that they've got like a very loose schema, so you can kind of put anything about anything into the database, which, you know, in traditional GIS databases, we tend to be more like formal schema orientated. So we want you to define the domain before you start putting data into it. But so we've got some tools that allow you to edit the data, but honestly, you're probably better off using JOSM or one of their dedicated tools if you're wanting to do any serious work on OpenStreetMap. A lot of people prepare data in tools like QGIS and put them in a shapefile and then send them to like the OSM project and say, here you go, and they sort of will run an import script or something to batch load it. But if you're trying to, like, you know, digitize your town streets one at a time using QGIS, it's probably not the best choice for doing that. You're probably better off with JOSM or one of their, you know, their specific tools for it.
Okay, and how is the project organized? How many core developers are there, and how do you keep in touch?
So for many years, we've been a pure virtual project, and But you know, as the project's grown, we've sort of formalized lots. We've got a project steering committee. There's now six of us on the. Six of us on the project steering committee. Actually, seven of us. We just added a couple more guys to the project. And then under the steering committee, like each person in the steering committee basically has a remit. So we've got, you know, a documentation team. We've got sort of marketing and finance team. We've got a code maintenance team. Within the project as a whole, we've got 29 core developers. Those are people with direct GitHub, you know, write permissions. Mm-hmm. And then we've had 179 sort of contributors. Those are people that have sent like some kind of trackable patch, you know, something that we can actually sort of grep their name out of if we go through the source code. But we've also had, you know, hundreds of thousands of other sort of flyby drive past patches given to us by people who sort of just do a once-off thing and then disappear again. And so we've got, you know, a very active developer community, and we try to, when people join the project, we try to get them, or when they sort of get given core developer rights, we try to get them to, you know, take on the maintainership of a particular part of the code base, because the code base is become quite complex and large over time. So we'll say, you know, welcome to the club now. Will you please look after XYZ bit of code or library or whatever you within the code base? And but beyond the developers, there's a huge community of people that are doing sort of non-development work. So we've got a documentation team, and we've got a full, I don't know how many hundred pages, but they've got a very detailed manual for QGIS. And then we've got like teams building the website and managing our infrastructure. We've got very active mailing lists, and there's a lot of people that just sort of hang around answering questions on the mailing list. And we're also on, I guess you know, the Stack Exchange website. Well, there's a gis.stackexchange.org.com, I forget what it is, which is the sort of the forum platform that we use. And again, we're pretty active there, and we've got very active members from our community that hang out there and help people. But it's all grassroots pretty much. There's no sort of big organization that runs the project, and the project steering committee is really there just to arbitrate if there are any sort of decisions that need to be made, like for example how to spend the donation money that we receive, or if we want to take some strategic decision, we'll take it to the PSC. But we're pretty much, you know, meritocracy. People arrive to the project. If they've got skills in a thing and they can demonstrate, then we pretty much give them their head to go ahead and, you know, get busy and do stuff. And the model's worked really well. I mean, we just get the most awesome things being added to the code base all the time. People just arrive out of nowhere and say, here's some cool stuff. It's sort of being a little bit free really helps the creativity and let people make it easy for people to contribute.
And so it sounded like you've got a lot of things going on, and you've talked a couple times about donations and about organizations paying the QGIS mm-hmm. project to be able to replace proprietary stuff with it. What's mm-hmm. the financial model like? Is it funded entirely, or is it a labor of love for a lot of people, or something in between?
So it's I don't know what the split is between people that just do it for the love of it and people that are now being paid to work on QGIS, and then, you know, as a result of that, for example, a client might approach me and say, well, we had a case last year with the World Bank. The client said, we want to make some improvements to the map composition software. And then, you know, I would say, okay, yeah, that's great, we can do it, but, obviously we're going to put it back into QGIS, and they're fine with that. And then we'll do some work on a contract basis for them and donate the code back into QGIS. And we try to sort of obviously guide people to do that as much as possible. From the project side, we want, you know, cross-cutting features, things that have got a broad usability, or, you know, a lot of people would want to use that. So if somebody comes with a I don't know, some esoteric plugin that counts the number of frogs around their pond and their garden or something. We're probably not going to include it in the core of the project, but anything that's, you know, sort of generically interesting, we'll sort of accept into the project, and that is likely to be maintained. And then we, a couple of years back, we also started a sponsorship program. So we've got a couple of sponsors, and basically we say, you know, we'd love to have you to sponsor the project, but it's not going to give you decision-making power in the project. So we reserve the right to decide firstly how to spend the money you donate. And then also, you know, we're not going to plaster your logo all over the front of the software when it starts up or something like that. We try to keep it pretty vanilla so that it doesn't look like it's, you know, coming from, I don't know, Pizza Hut or something like that. But you know, I think a very large part of what's in QGIS as you see it and run it on your desktop is just people doing a labor of love and donating their time and effort into the project and making it available to everybody. We'd love, of course, to have a lot of sponsors and help us fund our activities. I mean, the main things that we fund are every 6 months we have a developer meeting, usually somewhere in Europe because the majority of our developers are in Europe, and we get together in a room, eat a lot of pizza and hack for 3 days at a time and to sort of do the strategic thinking for the project and then go off and carry on working. We've got an IRC channel, which is #QGIS on irc.freenode.net, and most of the collaborations via the IRC channel or via mailing list, our developer mailing list. So, so it's a very grassroots project. I mean, we are still hoping one day that some, I don't know, insanely rich person comes and dollops, you know, millions of dollars into our bank account, whatever. I mean, I guess every open source project is waiting for that. But In the meantime, we sort of muddle on in our own way. But the sort of the contract based support that we're getting is picking up a lot as people, it's sort of a self perpetuating thing as more and more improvements get put into the code base and becomes more and more viable for more and more organizations, then they see fit to sponsor more people to add more features that they need and so on. And so it's sort of it's like a snowball effect.
Cool. Hey, actually, I lost the question I was going to ask. Darn it. So who decides then? It's the program steering committee, right, that decides sort of where the future is going with this, right?
Yeah. But it's like I said, it's very, very merit-based. I mean, we're very light touch on the steering wheel. So, I mean, basically, if somebody's the maintainer of a given piece of code and they think they've got a good idea, they normally just go ahead and implement it unless it's really something cross-cutting. Like, for example, let's port to Qt 5 or something like that. We pretty much let people go ahead and do their own thing, and then we'll, you know, big decisions like that we'll take as a group, you know. And usually, like let's port to Qt 5 is, it's going to be 10 years before Debian has it in their repository, so let's wait or something, you know, something along those lines.
And given how internationally it seems to be used, has it been translated into a lot of different languages, internationalized?
Yeah, I've lost track, but I think there's probably 25 languages that have been fairly decently translated, and then many others that are sort of, you know, got fledgling translation. So, you know, sort of 10% or 15% or something like that. But there are sort of probably at least 8 of those languages are 100% translated. You know, so if you speak German or Portuguese or I think Dutch or Russian, whatever, you're in good shape for using it in your native interface, in your native language. And we got sponsorship to translate to Indonesian as well, even the work we're doing here. And it's all using Qt's Qlingua. So we've been playing around with Transifex. I listened with interest to the various translation projects you guys have been interviewing. Primarily, we've been using Qlinguist, which is a sort of desktop app from Qt for doing translations. And also the manuals and the documentation is translated, and the website is translated. And we're very sort of international or multinational location friendly. And actually, one of the things people like about QGIS is they can load up their Chinese data set and sort of actually it will work in QGIS, because some of the proprietary software just can't handle, you know, these various different character encodings that people use and so on.
Cool. We're almost out of time. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
Well, I guess I should just mention the website is qgis.org, and you can see it, I guess, on my lower third there. And we're a very welcoming community. I think we're quite proud of the fact that we're probably one of the friendliest open source communities out there. I don't think we've ever had a flame war or something like that. And we're very understanding of people come along and not really understanding the domain that we're working in and want to just get started. So we welcome anybody to come along and sort of use QGIS as a platform to start learning about geospatial data. And we're always looking for new developers. So and that's not only developers like in the desktop application, but people who've got web development skills or people who like to do very low level sort of data processing and so on. And we're always looking for translators and document writers and people to fix bugs and just even manage the bug queue and so on. So so come along and check us out. Also, if you actually want to get a flavor for what you can do, we've got a Flickr pool in a Flickr community. I think if you just search for QGIS on Flickr in the communities section, there's a screenshot section and an example map printout section, and you can really get an idea of the kind of things that you can produce. So, come along and join in and have some fun with maps.
Very cool, very cool. I'm going to ask my two required questions now, or else some of my audience members are going to yell at me. So what's your favorite scripting language?
So you're probably going to yell at me too. My favorite scripting language is Python, and then Dash is a close second.
That's fine. You know, use whatever works. I always tell people that. I'm more familiar with Perl than anything else, but that's because I started early with Perl, like half my life, I said, as I've done that before. And I'm probably not going to like your favorite text editor either, right, am I?
No, I'm a long time Vim user, and I've actually just been switched in the last 2 years. I've started using IDEs, which is like very progressive of me, and I've been using PyCharm a lot with its Vim emulation mode. So I'm still kind of using Vim, but in a fancy GUI. I love Vim.
Okay, very good, very good. So I want to thank you for coming on the show and talking to us about QGIS, and hopefully informing a number of people that might not know about it before. Now they'll know because they'll have listened to the show.
Great, thanks for having me on.
Very good. That was Tim Sutton, one of the key representatives for us from the QGIS project. What do you think, Gareth?
Very cool stuff. excuse me. I have one of those frogs that was on the map in my throat. Very, very exciting. I mean, I could see like tons of applications where this could definitely be used.
Well, I like the idea that it was more than just mapping software, that it was actually also analysis software, because, you know, to get that stuff correct is difficult, and I'm glad there's a nice open source package for all that. So that's pretty cool, too. So we'll see. And hopefully some of our audience members, if they weren't aware of it already, will be able to use QGIS for whatever application they might have.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I like the InnoSafe project that he mentioned, just being able to kind of plan that stuff out ahead of time and know well before a disaster what you need to do. It's great to see like an open source project doing something like that.
Cool. Well, speaking of open source projects, we still have a few more projects scheduled between now and the end of the year. We've got the next week coming up, the OpenSUSE Summit. OpenSUSE, we've had them on the show before, and now apparently they have a conference that they are doing. I forgot to ask him if their conference is for QGIS, but I imagine it's just part of other GIS conferences instead. Following that, we have G Potter, which is a podcast manager. Some of you, in fact, may be listening to this show, this very show, using your G Potter application. RDO, which is the OpenStack Community Edition. So RDO is Red Hat something O for OpenStack. I don't know what the letters stand for. Anyway, it's one of those. And then rounding out the schedule so far is Crossroads, which is a fork of ZeroMQ. We had Peter Hingens talking about ZeroMQ. We'll have the explanation for why that got forked by the person who forked it, coming on to that. I still have a few open slots left in Q4. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you can actually see our spreadsheet link from there. And I'm still trying to fill those in before I have to leave on all my multiple cruises I'm taking between now and the end of the year. And I'll also be opening up Q1 immediately after that. You can follow us on Floss Weekly at Google Plus. Follow us on Google Plus at Floss Weekly. How about if I get the words in the right order today? Floss Weekly also on Twitter. We post there as well. We do have a live chat. As we said, we took a couple questions from there today. That's at live.twit.tv at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays, usually. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. But I'm more frequently speaking on Google Plus at Randall L. Schwartz, so you can follow me there. I have great discussions about open source stuff. I have discussions about my low-carb, high-fat ketogenic diet. I have also discussions about just humorous things. I send this post through three humorous things at Arrow's Day. And this is the last time you'll see me posting or posting from this particular location. Nami Media has been a great client of mine for about a year, and they're winding me up. They're winding up with me. There we go. My words are not coming today. My words are all in the wrong order today. But I am looking for work. I do Perl. I do DevOps. I do technical writing, all sorts of things. I won't be available until after the first of the year because I have, like I said, three cruises coming up. So I'll be all tied up all over the international planet here. I'm looking for more work, preferably in Southern California, but I'll go anywhere in the U.S. that I can get a plane ticket to. So that's all I have to plug today. What do you have to plug, Gareth?
I think you can safely guess.
About SoCal Linux Expo, I bet.
Something about that. SoCal Linux Expo is coming up in February 20th through the 22nd. I should really look up those dates just so I have the accurate information one of these days. But it's all on the website, SoCalLinuxExpo.org. So our registration is now open, as well as our call for papers. It's a great show. If anyone's interested in coming out and we have all the information on the website. So, yeah.
You know, I should say, is there a discount for Floss Weekly listeners for this registering for sale?
Is a discount, yeah. If the listeners use the code FLOSS, it'll give them a 50% discount off their ticket price.
Awesome. Awesome. Specials for our audience. That's always nice. Thank you very much for that. Let's see. I think we're just about done. And we're almost just out of time. So it's a good thing to do. So we'll see you again next week on Floss Weekly.